Hello and welcome to Race Talk tonight. I'm so glad everybody joined us. Welcome. Got a question for you. How many of you racing geezers and geezettes remember an old TV show called Have Gun, Will Travel? Old Paladin, remember him? He was quite mild-mannered traveling guy until faced with action and danger, and then watch out. Maybe not a role model for tonight's guest, Rick Noop, but there are some fun parallels there. Rick is a fourth-generation rancher in Northern California. He grew up with tractors and heavy equipment, learning the ropes around livestock, horses, fields, and orchards. His dad, Fred, was a race car driver who campaigned in Austin Healey 100S quite successfully back in the 50s. His garage was a source of fascination for Rick, and he counted the days when he could take to the tracks around California in his own cars. In his early days in the mid-70s, he jumped into Steve Earle's Monterey Historic Car Racing Series, driving a McLaren Coupe and an Alfa Romeo GTB, winning his first championship in 1977. But he was still not yet a full-time racer. He climbed the ranks as a competitive surfer and earned his pilot's license and went flying. In the meantime, he completed his education at University of Southern California, Los Angeles, with degrees in business and economics. As a matter of fact, he missed his graduation ceremony in 1978 to go to Le Mans, driving the Amdahl Kramer 935-77A with Chris Cord and Jim Busby, where they won their class and finished sixth overall. From there, Rick raced everywhere from Le Mans to Pikes Peak to Talladega, and almost every road course in the Northern Hemisphere, driving with good friends for some top teams, IMSA, NASCAR, SCCA, and many vintage racing series. The cars were top runners. The teams were tight and professional. And the friends he made have remained with him ever since. Well, most of them. His greatest thrill was to get a call with an invitation to drive and then to join a team to become part of that working organism, one race or one season at a time. Have helmet, will travel. And I'm going to turn it over to the incomparable Rick Noop. Thank you so much for joining us, Rick.
Well, thank you, Trish. It's an honor to be on here. I've followed the other podcasts that you started and to watch the IMSA Pit Lane. It was one great series that I was very fortunate to be a part of. It seemed a little simpler than to identify the cars and the drivers. But I've driven, just about anything you can imagine. As you pointed out, being brought up on a ranch, I'd go from the water wagon to the backhoe to hauling hay. And in that theme, I've driven for the GTU factory, Mazdas, GTO, and GTX, and GTP. So thanks for having me. Do you want me to keep going?
Yo, please. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, basically, my father did race, and I grew up with a lot of scrapbooks when I was a little kid. And I'm the oldest of four, and from Northern California, summers on the ranch. And I would look at the Sterling Mosses, the Phil Hills, the Jim Halls, the Maston Gregories, the Richie Ginthers. And later, I just always was just thrilled with it. My father built a car with a guy by the name of Joe Huffaker, and I think most of us remember Joe, and Huffaker Engineering is still a thriving business at Sears Point. So Dad and Joe Huffaker, they opened up a place called Laguna Seca, and by opening up, he qualified on the front row. That was November of 1957. The previous year, Dad closed Pebble Beach in the 100S. Dad didn't want to be a class within a class like we do in GTP, GTO, and GTU. He wanted an overall car. So lo and behold, they The people at Pebble Beach had a huge accident. Unfortunately, Ernie McAfee was killed. And then Sports Car Racing of Monterey Peninsula built Laguna Seca. So my heritage is I'm a second-generation racer. To say Dad wanted me to go racing was not the case because it's very capital-intensive, as we all know. So my father started with a guy named Steve Earle, Monterey Historic. We were there in 1974 for the first year. And Dad started buying some yesterday's race cars because he missed it. So most of us had our schooling done, the kids. The second year of the Historics, I drove a McLaren Can-Am car, one of three, and ended up in second place, passed a guy by the name of Bob Bondurant. So I thought, well, I'm just going to be real quiet, but I think maybe I got a shot at this. I don't know yet. Fast forward, I went to the Bob Bondurant School, and I excelled there. I was, or at least I was told that, and went to the Rolex 24 Hours at Daytona after a year of driving the Alfa Romeo. 78 was my first professional season, and drove with Bob Aiken, Steve Earle, and myself. And it was a car that a lot of us will remember. It was the ex-George Dyer RSR. Guy by the name of Jim Busby was the one that prepared the car. I met Jim in 77. I was so excited I could hardly see straight. I'd watching Buzz and Carl Schaefer and, oh, my God, Peter Gregg, all those guys. When I was in college, I'd go to all the Camel GT stuff, and now all of a sudden I'm driving the car that Busby is preparing. And that started a long, long relationship with Jim Busby. I've been associated with Jim Busby for 43 years now. We're both about the same height, and we've done awful lot of racing in some very factories, non-factories, but the preparation and everything at Busby. But I'm honored to know Jim, and he's one of my closest friends.
I hope he's listening tonight. Did you tell him?
Didn't talk to him. I had a call in. I hope he's on too. I don't know.
I hope so too. Jim, if you're out there. So what's next?
Well, I was very fortunate. I can kind of go chronologically if you'd like. As I said, in 1978, we ran sixth overall. And basically, Busby, Jim was there driving with Hal Shaw in a 935, sponsored by a restaurant he had called the Ore House. And he'd kind of sneak over Judy Stropitz's shoulder and kind of say, God, this guy looks pretty consistent. And I was noted for having above-average traffic management, and God, no, Bob Aiken, it was his first race, too. So I got my start through vintage racing. And so it's three vintage guys, Steve Earle, Aiken, and myself. And lo and behold, we ended up seventh overall at the Rolex 24 Hour. Then we went to a race. Yeah, go ahead.
78?
78, yeah.
Okay.
Then the next race that year we did, that season was the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring. Did the same thing, just kind of kept a good, crisp, accurate race. We're in the same RSR, Busby prepared. We ended up sixth overall. Now the big one happens. Kramer brothers, Manfred and Erwin Kramer, Cologne, Germany, talk about a race called Le Mans. And Busby says, do you know anybody that might want to go? And I said, boy, I sure think the world of Chris Cord. Chris and I have been friends since the early 70s. Great guy. And I knew the chemistry would be good with Busby. So the three of us were three Californians representing the U.S. There was a three-car effort for the Kramer brothers. The race is the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And out of the three cars, And by the way, it was our first time at Le Mans for Busby, for Chris Cord and myself. And lo and behold, we ended up sixth overall, first in group five. That sort of got me on the map. I was fortunate enough to finish the first three races. Now I think I was fourth in the World Endurance Championship, and I'm 24 years old. And I thought, wow, I didn't think this was going to happen.
Well, you're just charmed, that's all.
Oh, I don't know what we were doing other than I was just behaving there. You know, driving ranch equipment from the Navy surplus, you get all sorts of crazy creatures up there. And driving a Porsche with a rear engine, I said, boy, I like this a lot. And then I drove for a guy named Howard Meister. Busby was recommending me. How about that? And I thought, well, I said, put this kid in. And 24 isn't necessarily a kid anymore with the kids growing up on go-karts. But then we went to a place called Mid-Ohio. I'd never been there before and did real well. I was loving driving RSRs. Holy crap. Motor was in the back. You could really late brake and the inside wheel would be up in the air. And we all used big anti-roll bars then. They almost looked like a Hobie cat going around the track there. And I actually came back with a record there that held for a couple of years. So all of this, I guess, was saying a story that I worked very hard with through my piloting and my dad, who was my best friend and hero and all those fun things. But I really wanted to represent not just me, but the people that actually had the car stripped down to the tub and the people that were Andile. Gosh, I was with Andile, too, or driving their motors. So I guess the word started to trickle out a little bit that I wasn't putting it through the fence. And if the car would stay together, more times than not, I was able to keep it in through good traffic management. That year, you guys, if you want to hear some more, we end up driving the champion RS series with BF Goodrich, the RS cars. And I got to know Amos Johnson and Bunny, and I ran a race at Talladega. I won there with Tom Waugh in an AMC Concord.
Cool.
And he's from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Then I was basically just trying to do almost the Blue Angel type discipline, and no matter what, bring the car around. And then, they've got that thing on the computer. You know, all the cars I've driven. I've never owned a race car, which I guess is the reason I'm still doing it 40 years later. The phone still rings, and as you put, have helmet, we'll travel. I'm still pretty active. 79, I drove in the single seat Can-Am. My dad, it was Lola 333 at Riverside International Raceway, and boy, now I'm in the mix with K.K. Rosberg, John Morton, Elliott Forge Robinson, you know, the big guns, and I held my own there. '79 was kind of an interesting year. I didn't have a ride for the full season, but any time an endurance ride, I was humbled my phone would ring. '80, I drove with Jim Busby. We debuted one of the first GT prototype category. Most of the time up to then was 935s, the GTX type cars. And then GTP came in with John Bishop, and Robin Hurd from March Engineering put together a BMW March. We debuted that car, and it was a brilliant looking car. Busby, myself, and Bruce Jenner. I kind of coached Bruce Jenner to drive in road courses, and that was kind of an interesting time of my life because he had some go-karts, and we would wet down this track out here in California and with some Yamahas, and we'd get those sideways, and I was teaching him how to rotate a car, and then I was kind of a personal instructor at the Bob Bondurant School. I did 5 days with him there. And then, as you know, he went on to, in the GTO Ford category with Roush and all those guys. So, you want me to kind of keep, I don't really, I'm kind of free ranging this. Are there, is there a question you want to hear about Pikes Peak or sprint cars?
Tell us about driving for Captain Midnight, Dave Kent.
Well, the Dave Kent era was absolutely a first factory involvement, and Hawthorne, California, Dave had a wonderful business called Creative Car Craft with some formidable drivers, Lee Mueller, Walt Boren, and once again, Dave, I would come in those in the longer races, and that's when we were running the 9-inch Ford rear ends, and Dave Kent came up with a lot of the bodywork that many teams basically had on their cars, and it was marvelous racing, almost reminiscent of the IROC series. There was races of, with Roger Mandeville, Jim Downing, Lee Mueller, myself. All in about the size of a closet in your bedroom after 30 laps. I mean, we were, and also not destroying each other, but almost photo finishes and sprint races and longer races. But Dave Kent was a full-blown genius, and very grateful that he found me and I found him. I was doing everything from, I'd just gotten back from Le Mans, France, and here I am running parts on a Von Dutch Harley Davidson shovel head with a backpack on, going all over Long Beach and Champions, I mean, Simpsons and all that stuff when we were building the cars on rotisseries inside, and hell of a painter, as you know, Dave. And then I ended up driving for Dave when we got the first Toyota factory contract, and it was Lee Mueller and myself and the Celicas. I kind of fast-forward 1982, but that was my first full year of factory involvement, and I'll forever be grateful for that. '83, I drove for Racing Beat, and I drove with Pete Halsmer. The first race of the year was the Rolex 24 Hours, and we had a 300-horsepower Mazda GTO category, so it was really sort of average horsepower, but we were running against one of my all-time great buddies that just left us, Gene Felton, in the Stratograph Camaro, and Billy Hagan, and Terry Labonte. So it was kind of, you know, the giant, we were a little giant killer, but we ended up that year at Daytona third overall and first in GTO. Then that year, the RX-7, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And then we went to Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring that year, 83, and led the whole race. That's the year they had the water contamination. And going into the 10 and a half hours out of the 12, Halsmer is going into the Stirling Moss hairpin, and the left front brake rotor shattered. And it took the oil line, the brake line out. And unfortunately, we went out. But that's one of those could have, should have, would have. Not only were we third overall at Daytona a month or so before that, but now we're leading Sebring. With about an hour left, I think the car didn't come around, and God, I think I was in tears, because you know how you get your heart in these things, especially if you run that long. Pete Halsmer was driving for RCR, or the IndyCar, when he would have a confliction with Racing Beat, another dear friend of mine, and I was just always so honored to be paired with some of these guys, was John Morton. So John Morton and I go to Mossport, and we won that race. I think we were fifth overall there. We did big things in that GTO category. And Jim Meter was very, very interesting man. You know, he came from the shadow and Don Nichols and being the crew chief. And Jim Meter sat us down in his GMC motorhome at Mossport, and he looked at Halsmer, and he looked at me, and he said, "Gentlemen, I've never, by the way, ever heard this from a car owner." Or he says, "I want you to drive every lap like the fastest qualifying lap you've ever been in this car. It's the only way we can do this." And I looked at Halsmer and I said, "I'm up for it. I know you are, Pete. Let's get it on." And boy, it was like throwing Hail Mary passes every turn. But the car was so damn good. And Halsmer and I complimented each other so damn well. And my God, there we go. And that little car, I think it's in Costa Rica now, but that little darn thing it was something else. And when I say throwing Hail Mary passes, I swear to goodness, thank God there was always an oil flag, or else we would have ended up in a different zip code, I think. So we really, I guess I can transition into the Mazda days. Now I've got a pretty good footprint. Dave and Trish and Janet, so Mazda comes up to Jim Busby, says, "We want our street-approved TA radial. We're going to shave the treads off these things," kind of similar to what they did in the Radial Sedan Series. And they came up with a totally for racing purposes, but it was also recognized by the Department of Transportation. Mazda comes up into my life again. Another full season, but this time it's going to be a Camel Light car in the U.S., Group C2 in Europe. And and the rest was kind of, those are the familiar livery that many of you, I think, will remember. They were a gorgeous, the B.F. Goodrich cars. Then we got into 962s. But, gosh, we went to Le Mans. That was my second time. I went back there again in 84, and we were first and third there. So wow. Le Mans has been good to me. I've never driven it with the chicane. And that is one fast son of a gun, 3.8 miles if you got some horsepower underneath you. And you can see why they had to slow the cars down. And so my Le Mans experience has been good. The same year we went to Europe, I won at the Nürburgring and also won at a place called Monza in Italy. B.F. Goodrich was ecstatic, and they wanted it to the next year to get into the big boy class, and that's when we got into the 962s. It was a challenge. We didn't have the Leo Mel and the Goodyear footprint in terms of the experience and the various compounds for tracks, but gosh, we held our own. I got to drive with Jochen Moss, so that was interesting. Before we had transponders, it was always an honor to have Judy Stropas with us. That was almost in its own right. If Judy was doing your timesheets, as you all know, you must be on a pretty good team. She got all the Penske stuff in the Mark Donohue days. So it was pretty exciting.
She is amazing. And she's just been inducted into the Hall of Fame. So we're very, very happy with her. I know that was good. So what came next?
Well, we I moved to North Carolina, to Mooresville. During this time that I've been talking to you about road racing, and I'm going up the ladder, being careful about it, trying to not have any pilot error or driver errors. If I was to come in at all, it was either because of a mechanical or something. So I was pretty proud of my finishing rates, but I was driving exceptional cars. And I decided there was a thing called the Winston Cup. And driving haul and hay and 10-wheeler dump trucks and flying biplanes and crop dusters, I thought, you know what? There's a reason why I'm not flying planes right now, because some of these cars are going faster than an airplane does, and I wanted to hone in on my skill set. So lo and behold, I did an occasional guest drive at the Budweiser at the Glen. At that time, Peter Gregg was asked. The name of the team was D.K. Ulrich. David Hobbs did a guest drive. Elliot Forrest Robinson, guest drive. And my name came up, and I was humbled by that, and I said, sure, I'll give it a go. And went to the Watkins Glen, and they told me I did real well. And I thought I did, but, you know, sometimes it's better, you know, we're given two ears and one mouth. If you can kind of hear other people maybe give you a pat on the back, it's good, because you never know. You're only as good as your last lap type stuff. So I was never trying to run in the middle of the pack. I'm very competitive. And if I got enough underneath me, everything was good, but the motor was a little soft. And that particular year, we were in the garage area. I had run this two times, the Budweiser at the Glen.
And it was a Monte Carlo, right?
Yeah, the Monte Carlo. And there's Junior Johnson with the Kentucky Fried Chicken sponsorship with Neil Bonnet and Darrell Waltrip. And this is kind of a kick. Janet, maybe here's one of those stories you'll dig. So I'm listening to Darrell. He comes up to my car, well, not mine, but the car owner, says, damn it, that son of a bitch goes by me every lap, and I go by him like he's tied to a tree. He says, why don't you put an engine in that damn thing? So I heard that. I heard that, and I thought, holy shit, that's pretty good stuff. That's coming from Walter. So I think a lot of this was driving in the smaller divisions, and I did a little bit of that one of my first entree into NASCAR with the big yellow bumpers, saying I was a novice. And then I was asked to do pretty much almost a full season. I ran the last non-restrictor race at Talladega. I got in just a hair over 200, and I'd never been there other than the road course, and that was back in 87. And maybe some of you remember Bill France, and everybody says, we got to slow these guys down. Bill Elliott was on the pole at 211, and our average speed at Talladega that year from the pole sitter to the provisional last guy was faster than the pole at Indy. And I thought, how can that be? Well, you know, you get air drag with exposed wheels, and all these guys back in North Carolina have always been pretty clever about getting that air around these 3,800-pound cars. And so I'm coming out of four. I'm running about 15th. Motor not quite what it could be, but I'm sure as hell not going to complain. And all of a sudden, I see Miller High Life, not on all four wheels, but in the air. And that's when Bobby Allison had that just unreal wreck. And it was about two football fields ahead of me, and I'm not kidding you. I saw, holy crap. And they stopped the race. Yeah, they stopped the race not for 4 minutes and not for for 40 minutes, but for 4 hours. And I'm sitting there, sitting on a 50-gallon drum there going, holy shit, do I really want to do this again? Because there was shrapnel. And so I guess I can put that in my little diary. I ran the last non-restrictor plate race. And then we ran the Monster Mile at Dover. And that's when it was 500 laps there. I think physically that's the hardest race I've ever done. Just hot, humid. I ran Michigan, ran Charlotte, and for a couple of reasons it didn't pan out. Most of it was, once again, the ability to come in with mega sponsors. But it was sure a wonderful experience. A little bit of fun stuff. My next door neighbor was Tim Richmond, and he was driving for Harry Hyde in the Folgers car. And Dale Inman was across the bay, actually living at Lake Norman. So, and Lake Speed, I was water skiing with. And it was a wonderful, wonderful era. I guess it's a lot different now. I went back there a couple of years ago, and you know, now there's helicopters and everything is a couple of blocks long. I mean, it's great, but gosh, racing's changed a lot, hasn't it? So,
when did you come back to California?
I came back that year, in 88, and. Oh gosh, what happens now? Okay, now so I'm starting another business. I spent a year out of the Camel GT and IMSA ranks, and I decided that I was going to stay in Northern California, do some ranching for a while, still keep my racing licenses as they're all current even today because I'm still real active, but I wanted to switch gears a little bit. And I interviewed with Rick Hendrick when he had the Chevrolet GTP car. And there was one time when I may have been teamed up with, I think Hobbs had his name in the hat. And then I did some... Group 44, and I was bouncing around a little bit, but ended up, for a couple of family reasons, we went ranching for a while, and had a pretty good go. Then, to fast forward, Jim Busby and I had a big reunion, and I moved back down to Laguna Beach, and we started redirecting his shop a little bit, and we ran a 5 Formula One cars out of there for some clients, and Jim and I once again started running in a series called the Historic Grand Prix. They were all powered by 3-liter Cosworths, and gosh, we were running with Lion Dyke and Dan Marvin and myself and Duncan Dayton and James King. Oh, my God, we had a hell of a time. And ran those nose to tail. The cutoff on that was 1982. And so we ran out of Busby's, gosh, all over the place. Even went to the Southern Hemisphere to Phillip Island in Australia and ran 3 races there. I was lucky enough to win 3. So then Pikes Peak surfaces. And I don't know exactly what exit you want to take off this highway because I've got about any category that's got a steering wheel. I can tell you I've either known someone or I've driven them.
Now tell us about Pikes Peak.
Pikes Peak, I went for the first time in 2012. It was the first year that there was no more of the dirt on it. As you know, it started life off as a dirt track or a dirt road. That's America's Mountain. a testing bed for GMC and just about everybody. It's 152 turns, 12.46 miles. First year I got there was 2012. Drove a car that we had put together at Busby's for a client, and it was a carbon fiber. It looks like a Lister. Leon Patton did the motor, about 1,000 horsepower. Motor's 20 inches back from the front axle, 2,600 pounds, really a go-getter. And starting line there is 9,300 feet. Finish line is 14,100. And I went up in 10 minutes and 53 seconds, I think. I'd never been there before. I can't honestly tell you I wanted to go, but when the opportunity presented itself, I did it. And awful lot of personal training and making the car adapt there. Huge wings on it because there's less air. There's less oxygen for the motor. We ran an oxygenated fuel. And we ended up 12th fastest overall and first in the exhibition class. So it's awfully happy with that result. Brought the car back to Busby's, and I'd been doing a run in the Nassau series in the Unlimited and won a couple of championships, and then the car owner would drive it in time trials. And then we went back in 2014 with a lot of modifications. We lengthened the upper and lower A-arms 4 inches, and the roll center went down 4 inches. So we basically had almost Formula One suspension on it. And we had, now we're in the Unlimited class because we had won our other class. So now I'm in the big dogs. The year is 2014. And I came in second overall in the event. So had pretty good luck at Pikes Peak, but you really got to cross your T's and dot your I's there. It won't wreck your afternoon. You can wreck your whole life there. So to be attentive there and a car that's right is paramount. You practice the lower, the middle, and the upper section, and it's really a grueling event, and I've done a lot of 24-hour races, but I think this is one, in terms of the preparation for car and driver, the high-intensity circuit training, the cardio and all that, I took it real seriously, and we were second behind Romain Dumas, and I was very proud of that effort. And then I went up two other times in an electric car, so I've been up Pikes Peak 4 times, and don't know. I was trying to get back again this year, but just COVID and everything has affected all of us, hasn't it? So it's been a little to get into the rhythm of a lot of opportunities. That doesn't mean this year there'll be some pretty interesting things going on, but I still really enjoy driving. It's not the end of the world if I don't, but at the same time, I'm licensed up and kind of like what Chris says, have helmet, we'll travel.
Now you won the SBRA championship in that McLaren. How was that?
I'm sorry, my dog, I just got him out of here. What was that about the championship and what?
You won the SBRA series in that McLaren.
Well, I won some races. I don't know whether we were accruing points, but the McLaren I've been driving, it's kind of a family heirloom. My father passed away in 2012, and obviously I couldn't bring him back, but the owner of the car said, would you like to drive it? And I said, boy, would I. You know, a Can-Am car to me is the ultimate example of a race car. You know, that's just unlimited. You know, it's crazy. And balance and making them right is pretty paramount. But, yeah, Dave, I had a hell of a good time in that car. I drove it for 6 years, and I won at places like Sears Point, which is a real interesting track with the motors, as you all know, are gone up so much. I mean, they had big horsepower then, about 700, but it's with the 494s, but we were running a 520 cubic inch, which we weren't playing with the rule book. They actually had them that with that displacement in the day, they were grenades. And we had close to 1,000 horsepower in a car that's 1,600 pounds. And going to Elkhart Lake, you were very aware you're going faster than probably a lot of people at that particular moment. I mean, the tachometer goes off like a jackhammer. There's no wave in it like an MGA or something. I mean, just every gear, you're just throwing in the back, and it's like you're taking off on a rocket at a carnival. But
anybody got questions out there? Hello.
Hello, it's Janet. I'll ask a question.
Go ahead. Yeah.
How are you doing with your teaching? Are you enjoying that? And my second question is, of all the races you've done, what was the most exciting and why?
Okay, I'll start with the driving schools. I'm really having a blast with that. I'm in the farm country here in Central California, so Willow Springs is 2 hours south from here, and it's a new school. It's D like David, K like Nuke, I guess, but it's for Dwayne Dement and Martina Kwan, and the idea is, there's various levels of it, is to a lot of these people that have got these cars that you buy at the showroom now that are so fast, a place to exercise them, and tremendously rewarding. I did level one a month ago, which is obviously the first. I had four students, and we go up to any level you'd like to. You know, we're available for personal instruction and stuff. But in order to get to be smooth, consistent, and the concentration, the one-on-one, it's one instructor for four that we were able to enjoy this last time. It's really a neat deal. And we use the big track as well as the streets of Willow. And I knock on wood, we haven't had any mechanicals, but like I said, they bring their own car, and they're primarily from the Porsche Owners Club, but that doesn't mean we don't have an Audi and a Miata occasionally. But Janet, it's awfully fun to watch people it's not just lead follows. At the end of the day, I cut them loose. But you have to remember that the car they came with is the car that they have to go home to their loved ones. I've been doing instruction for a number of years. When the phone rings, I go. And sometimes people can't get home because their car was wrapped around a pole. And then that's just, it's kind of unnecessary. So I give a little extra rick to those kind of people and get them to either calm down or to speed up, whatever the case may be. My favorite race of all time, I did the Rolex 24-hour when I was able to run with one of my heroes, Jochen Moss. To be on a team with him, and once again to have Judy Stropas, and then once again the Porsche 962, and to be leading that. We end up third, but we end up having a little mechanical. But I was able to put myself up against someone that had a world footprint, and I'm a pretty darn good student. I never think I'm all that. I just try to stay on the same lap, have something left at the end so I could turn on the car kind of like a volume switch. You know, if I run 8/10 and I can still see the helmets around me, and that's how that particular race, the 78 Rolex 24-hour, I was fortunate. I was had the last driving stint, and we weren't going to catch Preston Henn and Hoyt and Wallach, but you know what? I had a car underneath me, and that's one of the things I always like to have. If you treat them right and you treat the people right around you, chances are you got something left at the end of the season. If you're a prick and a Mr. Know-It-All, there's a lot of times it's so hard to keep momentum going as a driver, as you all know, unless you bring in mega bucks and all that. But I kind of like that they're really had anyone say, well, that guy is a prick, you know, multi-car teams sometimes. Well, wait, I'm getting off here a little bit. But my favorite race, definitely being teamed up with Busby and Jochen Mass. Now, I've driven with Busby all over the place, and I almost know how he's shifting the car without these in-car cameras. And now that I brought that up, we were the first in-car camera at a place called Riverside, the 1985 and we were first, second there. That was a good race too, Janet, because the two BF Goodrich cars are coming from an hour and 10 minutes away at a place called Laguna Beach, where Busby Racing's been there since 74. The year's 85. We got in-car cameras. There's Steve Evans and Brock Yates. What magic time. Love those guys. Diamond P Sports. Holy crap. You know, we all had a lot of fun then, but the racing was... So those two races, you know, and obviously Le Mans, but Le Mans, my goodness gracious, halfway down that straightaway, one lap there is almost 8 miles, and before they had the straightaway, you're just going, are you got to be kidding me? And you're just in it, and in it, and in it. And it's not in third gear, it's in top gear, and you're going, oh, and the motor, it starts wallowing. You know, it's just, whoa, oh, and you, after that, and you're going, holy crap.
And I was hoping Janet, to your win at Nelson Ledger in 1984.
Yeah, 1984, kind of a neat deal, Dave. Yeah, you and I were both there. We got a call from BF Goodrich and Porsche. Porsche calls Busby up and says, we're going to introduce a car called a 944 Turbo. So all of a sudden, Buzz looks at me and says, nope, we're supposed to be at Monza the weekend after that. He said, you want to do this? And I said, hell yeah. And we went to the Nelson Ledges, drove with our mutual friend, Dave Freddie Baker. And boy, oh boy, what a race that was. I've never been there. We ended up, holy cow, I think I did the last driving stint in that one too. I always love that. We have this little baby that has been going and going and going, and then all of a sudden to get nominated to be the last guy in the car, I was elated. But I think we won that race by 33 laps, and I wasn't showboating, but the car never had anything wrong besides a couple of mosquitoes on the windshield and putting some gas in it. So Porsche was very clever. They've always been clever, as we all know. But they put Freddie Baker, Busby, and myself in. And it goes back to that thing, you guys, where a lot of us are old enough. What wins on Sunday? What happens on Monday? We sell. So that was a big one in the showroom stock fraternity. And still a big one in my life. I loved it. Trying to go back there again this year. So we'll see what happens.
They still do a 6-hour at Nelson Ledges?
They're doing a 24-hour in June.
Whoa.
Whoa. Yeah.
What series is that?
Don't know all that. Dave, you could probably fill that in. But
no, it's not a series. It's just a standalone event, kind of replicating the 20.
Oh, okay. Okay. Little tradition. Well, folks, I know you've had your phones muted. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Newt?
Am I unmuted?
I hear you.
Ricky, it's Charlie Downs. You tell a great story. How about telling us some stories about some of your more funny co-drivers?
Charlie, how you doing? Happy New Year. Well, I think one of my favorite co-drivers of all time has got to be Joe Vardy. You know, when we were developing the Mazdas, and Charlie, you were with us over at that place called Creative Car Craft a lot. They threw me in the car with Vardy and up at Portland International Raceway, and I'd always driven with and against Joe, as you know, but we'd never shared the same cockpit. And a character, but all business. And I loved the series for that reason. I could never complain and say there was somebody that wasn't doing their job. But Joe Vardy would have to be one of the most congenial guys I've met. Lee Mueller and I, Kath Food that whole year, Walt Boren. But I'd have to put Joe in kind of a, in his own class on that one. I'm trying to think who. Tony Adamowicz, real interesting. We were the days, Charlie and Janet and Trish and Dave. Remember, there was only two of us or three of us in these 24-hour races. Now there seems to be a handful, but you really get to know someone, and it's good to have not only the body language and also the respect for each other, but also the ability to keep the three, you know, the pedal assembly and the gears and all that together. But to answer your question, Charlie, Joe Vardy, without a doubt.
Fantastic. Thanks for that. If you've got more memories, please, let's hear them.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Bull Montgomery. I don't know if you're
Bull Montgomery.
Yes.
Holy smoke! How are you?
I am great. Living large in L.A. That's Lower Alabama. And other than lost a great friend last month, Charlie Cook.
Oh,
I know.
I've worked with Charlie on IMSA tech crew for about 3 years after I retired. But I still remember the race at Talladega. And I thought my stopwatch was broken because you ran three laps and it never changed a tenth. But that was my first IMSA win with you, so I really remember.
Oh, Bo, it's so good to hear your voice. Tom Waugh and I in that AMC Concord and my heart is just sick over Charlie Cook. Those were very special days, Bo, and it's real special to hear your voice. We gave it our all, and I still have a picture of Tom and I and all of us in the winner's circle. That was a damn good race for us, and that was a damn good car. So I appreciate everything you put in it because I drove that son of a gun as best as I could, and so did Tom. We all gave 100%.
Yeah, that was – and you mentioned Joe. Joe and I were real close friends. I ended up in North Carolina in Mooresville running an engine shop for a bunch of years for a guy named Bill Amick. Joe and David Amick won the Motorola Cup series in 2000 in Vipers.
Beautiful.
And he's got team TGM now that he's pretty much a general manager type guy.
Yeah.
they had some issues, I think, put them out of the 24 this year. So.
Oh, good. Well, Happy New Year, Bo. Those are thank you so much. God, it's great to hear your. It's good to hear everybody's voice. It's a fun reunion.
Yeah, it was a great race. I really thank you because, like I said, you brought me my first win. Got a lot more after that.
Yeah, I know you did. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Our friend Brant Dole got me sort of aligned with you all, and I was doing some stuff with the Mazda that he did, and gosh, that was just, we were all brand new faces, but my goodness, if we didn't get to the victory stand, and it's a great picture. So thanks so much. It's good to hear your voice, Bo. Good. Thank you.
Have you talked to Brant lately?
No, it's been a couple of years, but
I've been trying to get up with him, but I can't get any phone numbers that seem to work.
Okay. Well, if there's a way to find you, I can look into my thing. I haven't talked to him though for a while, but if I get creative, I'll find you somehow, and I'll shoot you his number.
Dave has my email address.
Okay, good.
You guys all need to buy my IRS book, which has all those pictures in it.
That's right.
Way to plug, David.
Yeah.
Have they shipped out yet, Dave? Have the RS books been shipped yet?
No, I'm expecting them this week, actually.
Okay. Looking forward to it.
Got a bunch of pre-orders, so they'll all be going out. I think you're on the list there, Bo.
Okay. Thank you.
I think we're about out of time here, Trish.
I think we are, too. And we'll wrap it up. Oh, my goodness, this was fun. Rick, you're just amazing. how you remember all these things. This is fabulous. I knew you would do it.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm tickled that you guys wanted to hear some of this, because they're awfully cherished memories, and I miss those particular days of the GTU, GTO, and there's so many fun spots. Gosh, I haven't heard. I haven't heard Janet's voice in I don't know how long. Charlie, I haven't heard from. Dave, I hear occasionally. And there's more out there, but I'll just say I'm alive and well. I've got a dog named Rhodey, and I hope to see you at some track. I still got a helmet, and as Trish says, I'm willing to travel. So there you go.
Well, I hope you've got some seasons coming up. I know you've got things in the works. So I'm looking forward to hearing more of it. In the meantime, somebody down the road, we want to do a tag team with you and Jim Busby. That'll blow the phone lines out, I think. But I'm going to have to say that I am so pleased that people showed up to listen tonight. I hope everyone has had as good a time as I have. And, Rick, thank you so, so very much for your time and effort and your memories and your humor and your philosophy on all of this, because you you're the whole package. We'll put it that way.
Oh, you're awfully nice. Thank you, guys. It's coming from the heart. Each and every one of you have got a special place in that. I don't live in yesterday, but I sure remember it like it was, because we all got to go forward. You all stay healthy out there, and to be continued, I hope.
I hope.